Hello and welcome to the Play What You Want podcast, where I talk about and review free and pay what you want role-playing game materials. Today, we are going to be talking about Nice Marines, a role-playing game by Grant Grant Howitt. There we go. This is a one-page deal, so we won't be having a very long review. Obviously, you found it on DriveThruRPG. This is kind of a silly, jokey role-playing game that looks like it's familiar with Traveler as a concept, where you play some space marines on a planet that the space force that you work for has just taken over, and you're trying to make the planet like you. And there's only a couple of you, space marines, and reinforcements aren't coming for a while, so it's just you and your fellow marines in charge of a diplomatic envoy dedicated to rebuilding after the conflict. That's what it says. So, but you have no idea how to do this. The, like I said, it's one page. The formatting is good enough to read. There's just like one little banner with some sketchy art and a couple other sketchy little cutesy funny art drawings on it. This, I thought when I was reading it, it was a solo game, and it's not. There's just one little paragraph for GMs, and that's it. The dice system is interesting because you don't have a character sheet. Nobody does. You could play this like one-on-one, I guess, just GM and a player, or multiple players together making a decision. But the dice system is I've never seen anything like this, to be honest. So you have a section that's called Approaches and Confidence. You assign a D20, a D12, a D10, 2D8s, and 2D6s to different approaches that you as a space marine, or you as the party of space marines, could take to help control the planet. These approaches are being nice to civilians, building and repairing things, gathering information, holding parades, impressing civilians, lifting heavy objects, and protecting civilians. So you assign one of these dice to each one of these aspects. Then you pick an element of the civilian culture that fascinates and perplexes you. And whenever that element comes up, you roll an additional D10, to whatever you just rolled. And these subjects, for whatever reason, are animals, cuisine, love, fashion, food, humor, lying, art, grab cars, and sadness. And then you automatically succeed at all combat actions. So this is not about shooting things. You then choose a piece of equipment that you bring everywhere. For some reason, I mean, it doesn't make sense. I guess it's just story stuff. It has nothing to do with like what your character can and can't do, but you can pick a flamethrower, an ancient god pistol, which I had to look up what that would even would be, a laser shotgun, which is a silly idea that I like, atomic jetpack, a psi axe, or a grapple cannon. I would probably choose grapple cannon, to be honest. But the ancient god pistol, I think the god pistol is like a Fallout thing. I've never played the Fallout games, any of them. It's just not my jam to play really long-winded video games by myself. I get bored. So I had to look that up. There's non-combat actions are difficult and confusing. Here's a little byline to give you a better idea of what we're even talking about trying to do here. You can crush a man's skull without thinking. You're heavy enough to damage buildings by entering them, and you haven't spoken to a civilian in centuries. When you attempt to resolve a situation without resorting to combat, roll the dice associated with the relevant approach and consult the chart below. So the idea is that this game is all about trying not to kill people and cause unrest. So when you roll the dice, so a bad situation happens, you roll the dice. We're trying to resolve the situation, and your result can range from a 1 of a terrible failure, a 2 to 4, mostly failure, some success, 5 to 6, success, 7 to 10, success with minor collateral, 11 to 19, success with dire collateral, and 20, success with catastrophic collateral. And then it defines what those collaterals would be. So as you can see, let's say Well, it's a little unfortunately apropos right now, but the citizens are rioting, and you and your Marines decide to hold a parade during the riot, which would be, I'm picking that because it is like one of the silliest things that you could possibly think of to do in that situation. And so you decide to riot, and or during the riot, you decide to hold a parade, and you put a D6 in holding a parade. You roll that D6, you get a 3, and that is mostly a failure with a little success. But let's say instead you got a D20 here. You put a D20 in holding parades because you're really good at it, all that goose stepping, and you get a 20, and that causes a catastrophic collateral. So that means buildings are destroyed, dozens of dead, civil war declared. So you paraded your people directly into the riot, and it caused massive carnage, is like, I guess, how you describe it. So it gives a little note for GM. GM, there are two factions vying for supremacy. Roll on the following tables twice, re-rolling duplicate results to determine who they are. So it took me like a second to read that, and it may not make any sense when I read it, especially because I stumbled through it. But there's two tables of six. And so how this would work is if I rolled a 1 on the first table and then a 3 on the second table, it would be an incredibly pious astral hyper church. And that would be one faction. And if I rolled a 5 and a 2, it would be a well-intentioned but overwhelmed law enforcement cadre. So those would be two factions vying for control of the planet during your conflict. And then you roll once or twice and combine if you're feeling brave for what the conflict centers around. So just picking a random one here, a 7 is a lack of funding for citizen outreach programs. That would be what the conflict centers around. Don't make the players roll for, the last note is, don't make the players roll for every little thing. Each time they pick up the dice, it represents the culmination or the catastrophe resulting from a solid afternoon of work. Okay. I don't understand games like this. There's like, I've written about this before. There's this line between storytelling, narrative, role-playing games, and basically elaborate war games. And this is there are, role-playing game zines back in the 70s that talk about this. This is not a new subject where, about this. This goes a step further in that it's much further down that line of a storytelling game, a narrative game. And I just don't, as a kid, I used to run a role-playing game based on it was like the Golden Age of Heroes. It was like a superhero game supplement book for like Golden Age characters that were like Watchmen characters, but the original ones. So like the Owl and the Minutemen and stuff like that. And all I had was the supplement book. I didn't even have like the core book, and I had owned a D20. And basically I was just making shit up for my friends and making them roll dice and then deciding if that, die result was good enough or whatever. We had character sheets, eventually ditched them. The book wasn't enough to play the game anyway, but I took the book with me every time. And I was obsessed with World War II like stuff at the time. So it was just, I just liked the airplanes and stuff like that. So, it was just purely narrative. It was just silliness in that sense, but we played a lot. We would do it over the phone. I guess I understand. I just can't picture myself doing it now, I guess. And that's because there's this thing about agency here that gets really weird. Like, okay, so a lot of modern games have mechanics that give a storytelling agency to the players, mechanics that allow the GM to make decisions, storytelling decisions. And I think that's all personally silly and pointless, because it's like this whole thing about like not trusting the GM to take the game the direction that you want to take it. It's like, we've all agreed to play this game, and if you don't like it, just don't play. It's almost like this idea that Everybody can sit around the table together, no matter who you are, where you came from, what you like, what you don't like, and play this one role-playing game, and everybody will be into it. And that's just not, you get enough people in the room, you're going to have people who disagree, you know, and don't like certain things. And it's just, it's, I don't know, this, the, I don't agree. There's more to the philosophy of it, you know, that I guess I just don't want to get into, but this takes you down, this kind of game takes you down a path where, you know, you're just sitting around listening to someone tell you a story. And I guess I feel like TV shows and books and things like that are better, more entertaining solo narrative type things, especially when you're talking about like, a, you know, professional storytelling, people who are like, you know, authors or professional storytellers and writers of TV shows and stuff like that. That's what they do for a living and they're really good at it. And I guess I don't think, maybe it's my problem, but I just don't think my friends are good enough storytellers. I'm going to sit there and listen to them talk for 4 hours where I only get to make one decision at any given point that I get to roll a dice. I mean, it just depends on how the GM does it, I guess. He allowed me to make decisions, clearly. But the outcome of them is totally up to the GM, you know, because we're rarely rolling dice. And it's just not, it's not my type of jam, you know. That being said, I've run probably more World of Darkness games than, you know, Vampire and Orpheus and stuff like that than almost anything else I've ever run. Longest running campaigns and stuff like that have been in those kind of systems. But I do make them roll a lot. Well, I do the rolling in that game, though. I have an interest, a different way of doing that. I do not let the players roll dice in World of Darkness games. I do. And that gives me, honestly, that's a device that I found really just gives me time to sort of properly come up with a result in my head, formulate a result in my head for the dice roll. I think I just found that when the players rolled, I felt more like pressured to just say, you know, you hit them, like, which is like in D&D, you know, you rolled, you hit, do damage, you know. And in Vampire, it's, you want to be a lot more descriptive and narrative, more narratively focused. Like you hit them, and you know, instead of saying hit them, you turn your blade sideways and slice up through his arm and blood spurt, you know, you just get more descriptive. And I find I just have more time to think that way. And just turned out to be a device for myself to do that. Anyway, as far as this thing goes, you know, it's not badly written. It's funny. I like the little tables and charts and the things that are written here. I think they're imaginative and clearly, you know, somebody who, the person who wrote this, who is an imaginative enough to have written this, is probably going to be pretty good at running this type of game. And I wouldn't be opposed to playing this type of game either. I'm not saying that. I'm not hating on the concept or anything like that. I'm more saying that I don't know what I would do with it personally. I guess I just need a little more rails to guide myself with than this. So yeah, if this is your type of thing, you can look up Grant Howitt. Damn it, I did it to him again. Grant Howitt on DriveThruRPG. He probably makes some other stuff like this too. I haven't looked into it, but I will. Maybe he's got some work out there or website out there or something that's better explains how to do it. So yeah, as always, have a good session. All right, it's time for another bonus comic book review. And today we're going to review Super Angry Birds from IDW. This is written by Jeff Parker, art by Ron Randall, colors by Jeremy Caldwell, and letters by Pisara Oli. This is what you think it is. This is the franchise that we all thought was just a game, and then it became so much more. The little byline here is, when New York City is in peril, only one team is brave enough, bold enough, mad enough to stand up and fight for the rights of its citizens. They are the Super Angry Birds. I got this on Comixology, surprise, surprise, free. I just started using Comixology through the quarantine because my favorite comic book podcast, iFanboy, you know, they've been talking about it for years, and I just don't like paying for digital comics. I just don't. If I'm going to pay for something, I want the physical thing. I collect-ish vinyl records. I wouldn't say I collect them because I play them. Like, I use them. And one of the nice things about vinyl records is when you buy a new vinyl record, most of the time you get a copy of the digital files. So you still get that digital copy. You can play your phone in your car, all that stuff. And I get the vinyl record to spin in my house. Man, that is a lame way to say that, isn't it? Spin? I totally apologize for having used that term. To play. Just play is good enough. Anyway, so this is a comic book that is based on that early smartphone game, Angry Birds. It was like the first real big cultural phenomenon smartphone game. And I'm sure everyone's familiar with it because it was free. I think that was a big reason why it got so popular, is because they had the free version. You could pay to unlock more levels. Hey, I played it. Hell, I play it right now. I think it was a good game. There was a reason it was popular. Beyond the fact that there was a free version, I think it was a pretty good game. So this book takes place in a fictional world of New York City, where you've got human beings, pigs, and birds. The setup of this book takes a while in a weird way, but basically you have a city that's run by the pigs. The pigs make up like the establishment and the cops. So it's like a corrupt city because the gangsters. So like the crime lord King Pig is greasing the palms, presumably, of the city officials and stuff like that. And you've got some birds that used to be like, it's weird, like you have these couple of birds, very few birds that aren't the superhero birds, who it seems that they used to be doing like the right thing in the city, and then the pigs got the power, and then they kind of started becoming a little bit corrupt themselves, and then you got these super birds who are fighting back. And there is some weird shit in this book, I gotta say. I don't know who the hell this is written for. I really don't. I guess kids, but I mean, it must be kids, because I don't know where else to go with it. Like, was it a thing in the games that the pigs were allergic to truffles, that it poisoned them somehow? And that was like a mechanic in the game of some kind? I don't know. But it comes up immediately with like a food stand, makes sandwiches. A pig eats a sandwich, gets poisoned by the truffles in the sandwich. They had truffle herbs. And who makes a sandwich with truffle herbs? I don't know. And the pig's like gangster buddies come back and they trash her stand. And then the super birds show up and like save her and fight the pigs. And there's a pig that's super fast, basically the Flash, and he reassembles the food cart after it got run over by a car. And she's like, oh wow, it's like new. And he's like, a little better actually. I fixed one of the burners on your stove. Okay. So could the Flash repair Like, even as a kid, I caught this kind of stuff, and I didn't, that kind of stuff that didn't make sense, where he's picking up chunks of wood and able to reassemble the food cart like it was before it got run over by a car. Like, even if you could move super fast, you couldn't make wood that's shattered adhere to itself again. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, what was he doing? Is he vibrating the fibers fast enough that they move? That would just make them burst into flames. Like, no. I refuse this. I refuse a lot in this book. And it's not fair because it must be targeted for kids because it's, yeah. And then we move on to a scene where King Pig gangster is like mad about these bird vigilantes that are dealing with thugs. And he's in a diner with these other pigs, and they see Old Mighty, who's an eagle, and he's a bald eagle. And the King Pig is telling his pigs to go over there and talk to him and tell him to do an expose on who these super birds are. And he's refusing. And then to make him do it, the bird says, "You don't run everything in this city yet," to the King Pig. But he says, "But the chef here is my uncle. And if you want sardine pasta to stay on the menu, I want to read an expose on these angry birds." And the bird stomps off, says, "Fine, it'll happen." Like, that's all it takes to get some, that's like the whole impetus of this. So then, like, he gets his raven reporter to start looking into it. And there's just a couple really confusing panels, like bad storytelling here, where a narrator suddenly picks up talking, but it's not clear who the narrator is supposed to be. And so then we get a breakdown of each character and their names. And we've got the flash bird named Chaser, who's like the yellow super fast bird in the game. And then it moves on to Red. But then, for whatever reason, we skip, like, because the narration's weird. It's like, we'll get back to him later. Like, why even introduce this character if we're doing, like, a breakdown of who these characters are, introducing the characters one at a time, but then we jump to one and then we jump away. Like, it doesn't make any sense to do that. Not good storytelling there. And then we get the explosion, or Thunderbird? Yeah, Thunderbird. The exploding bird. And then you've got the big buff bird. Man, I can't even find his name. It's the giant, really super strong bird. He's the only one that gets clothes for whatever reason. Like, everybody wears clothes. Here's something that's kind of weird. There's sort of a Donald Duck, Daffy Duck. Why aren't they wearing clothes? And what clothes, like, especially, I guess, Donald Duck. Daffy Duck doesn't wear clothes. Donald Duck wears a shirt, no pants. So the bird, like Chaser, he wears a trench coat and sunglasses until he decides to be super. And then he's wearing no clothes. And then the exploding bird, he was wearing a suit, then is just wearing a cape, no clothes. The giant, big, super buff bird gets to wear pants and a shirt. The red bird does not. I you know, the reason they probably gave him pants and a shirt is because he looks just like the red bird, but with clothes. So they probably did that as a way to mark a difference between them. There's, I guess, yeah, that makes sense. So they have a hideout. They're living in a greenhouse run by another bird who used to be a philanthropist in the city. The raven figures out, and they have this, you know, who they are, and they have this argument about doing the expose, and they're just like, fine, whatever. And then there's this whole backstory between Old Mighty and this philanthropist bird who's, I don't know if she's a duck or what, but that they used to be friends, and then the pigs got a hold of the city, and it got corrupt, and then they just kind of laid low and stopped being friends. And then he ends up, Old Mighty decides not, like, the duck, like, intervenes on behalf of the super angry birds to convince Old Mighty not to run the story, and so they don't. And King Pig is mad. And then it says, the beginning. So this is, like, issue one of four issues. I will not be reading those other three issues. Definitely a waste of your time. I mean, the thing is, right, like, this is, it's a licensed book, so you have to be, like, into it. And there's multiple Angry Birds games. I actually kind of like the Star Wars Angry Birds game. That one was cool. But there's multiple Angry Birds games, and was there a movie? I think there might have been a movie. There was an emoticon movie. God, I can't even imagine what that was. And so there's, you know, toys and stuff. So it makes sense. You know, you got this licensed property, squeeze every ounce of it out that you can. It's just, I can't imagine the task for the writer too. I mean, this wasn't this guy's like, oh man, I have this great idea for an Angry Birds comic. That is not how this came about. You know, he's hired to do a job. You know, he's doing the best. I mean, he's got this whole social commentary thing here where, you know, Old Mighty's a bald eagle and he's, you know, not in, he's been sort of pushed out of being important in the city. And even though he didn't run the city, I mean, it would make more sense if he used to be the mayor or something, but he never was. And then we've got this pig now, and so the city is now corrupt, and we got these birds that are going to clean it up. And there's, like, you know, I guess something to that, but it's pretty weak. The art's fine. You know, there's some, like I said, a little bit of storytelling issues as far as, like, the panels and just in one or two little spots. But it could have been a lot worse. There were chunks of it with the backstory and stuff like that where it was a little bit like, does there really need to be this much narration in this kind of comic book? And there's a couple pages where not an insane amount of word balloons, but more than I would want to read about Angry Birds, for sure. I think there's a lot of opportunities missed for puns. I mean, it's New York City and that's all we got. There's a scene where it's like flashback to the city falling on hard times, which is never explained why it fell on hard times, but the city falls on hard times. There's this flashback panel of Old Mighty and the duck chick bird, like, walking and crying. And behind them is, like, a sign that says free soup and coffee for the unemployed, and, like, an unemployment line mixed with people and birds. That there, I mean, I don't know what kind of pun could be there, but damn, they give them bird seed, something. I don't know. There should have been more jokes. There could have been a lot more jokes. It could have been funnier. It took itself weirdly sincere. Clearly the writer didn't know what to do, and I wouldn't have known what to do either. It could have been funnier. I mean, you might as well make fun of it. I guess that's the approach. The only approach I could say is, if you're stuck with this, might make it funny, I guess. I mean, would the owners of the license really been that offended of you making fun of it? I don't think so. I don't think they would have cared either way, to be honest. So, yeah, that is Super Angry Birds IDW. Don't do it. Don't read it. Leave it alone. You know, I'll make one other point, even though I just been wrapped up. So I've been reading, I bought some back issues of Marvel 2-in-1 with, the Thing, who's my favorite superhero. And there are some of these that are horrible. Horrible. Issue 88 with She-Hulk. What the fuck? It's so bad. I mean, the art's not great, and the story is stupid as hell. Some of the dialogue, especially from She-Hulk, is god-awful. She's basically trying to rape the Thing in the issue. He's got to, like, agree, even though, of course, he's got his lovely blind girlfriend. They only recently got married in the comics, you know, back in New York, and he lives with her and everything, and he goes to California to deal with something that he got roped into in a very clunky way, which is a lot of the Marvel 2-in-1s, honestly. You know, they're one shots, and usually the impetus of the stories are not all that great. But she agrees to drive him to where he's trying to go, he'll basically fuck her. And he's like, well, you got to take one for the team. Like, what bad writing. This Angry Birds comic is a lot better than issue 88 of Marvel 2-in-1 Thing and She-Hulk. Pretty much across the board. But I'd rather read the Marvel 2-in-1 than any more Angry Birds, because I love the Thing, and it's a piece of, like, history, you know, and you can laugh at these old books for how bad they are oftentimes. Modern books have less than an excuse for that. As I often say, I can't draw. I don't have any comic books. I can't make one. So these guys are doing something right. You've got professionals, for whatever reason, having to do the Angry Birds book, and they did the best they could do with what they had. So, you know, I hope it furthered their careers. I'm actually now curious to find out if they're still working or if this has jaded them. Anyway, that has been a bonus comic book review. Have a good session.